And here comes the great Chicago hero who's won many a championship and big game, Michael Jordan, to throw out the ceremonial first ball. And he's got a Sammy Sosa jersey on. Sammy Sosa, the catcher. Michael and Sosa, two of the biggest sports icons, not just in Chicago, but in the country and the world right now. And as has been customary, in every game Sosa plays, as well as Mark McGwire, the flashbulbs go off.
What a moment when you have the two icons doing their thing. That's great.
Isn't that cool? That's a little perspective on what it was like for anybody who is too young to remember.
Yes.
Or I'm, you know, we got a couple producers here or too young to remember, or like anybody who just doesn't quite have the grasp or whatever. That's Michael Jordan on the mound at Wrigley wearing a Sammy Sosa jersey, you know? And like and John Miller, the bard, one of the bards of baseball.
The great John Miller.
Putting them in the same category. And they were. Like for a while there, it's like Jordan did all the winning.
Right.
Those pesky championships, but as we know in baseball, it's not like we can blame one player for a lack of a team winning sometimes, but John Miller put him right there in the same category. That's some perspective on what
well,
it was.
Well, remember too, like while Jordan was doing the winning was the rise of this. And that last year of Jordan and the Bulls winning, then you go right into that. It's that month of June. Remember the 20 home run month?
Yeah.
Of June, like you go right from the Bulls winning the championship to Sammy Sosa doing something that you had never seen before.
That's a great call. That's a great call. And it was at a time, Lawrence, when like baseball lovers still believed it was possible, maybe, for baseball to reclaim its spot as the national pastime, or at least, you know, I mean, it's funny because like now nobody would put baseball first. Nobody. It's comfortably third, and baseball people are happy to be holding on to third.
I don't even know if it's comfortably third, Speaks. If we split football in half and say NFL and then college football, I don't know that baseball's third. But by the way, that month of June for Sammy Sosa was just absurd. Here are the splits. You ready?
Yeah.
298. 331, 842 for an OPS of 1.173.
Dude.
20 home runs, 40 RBIs for Sosa.
My goodness. Lawrence, I was living over near Western and Armitage, Levitt and Medill, tucked back there in Bucktown. I was driving
Is that the hardware? You were still working for the hardware store?
Yeah, in 98, I was absolutely splitting time between Armitage Hardware. So it was Fullerton and Western. But I was splitting time between Armitage Hardware and like bartending and playing music and producing on the score. I was doing all of that. Driving a beat up, I think it was an old Saab that I bought from a musician friend. But it was old, man.
Oh, fancy.
But it wasn't. Trust me, it wasn't. But like, I remember coming back from a rehearsal or a gig at night and listening to Pat Hughes and just staying in the driveway or, you know, or in the alley right there behind where we were living, because I didn't want to miss a Sammy Sosa at bat. That happened multiple times. It was like, it was more box office than any sporting event of our lives at the time.
And the thing that I could compare to it is, or the like, as far as like the feeling, it's what an Ohtani at bat is now, or I would say a Judge at bat too. But you have to isolate it into October for that to feel the same way as what we were getting in June of that month. What was going on with Sosa McGwire and what was going on with King Griffey Jr.
Yes,
at the same time. And for me, that's my first full month working at the score. The Bulls winning their sixth championship and Sammy Sosa doing stuff that we had never seen.
Yeah.
It was wild.
That is wild. And like now, because that was the year where it was like, oh, maybe baseball will find its way back and chicks dig the long ball. And that's why everybody turned a blind eye, no matter how blind the eyes were, you turned away. And I'm sure Tom Ricketts was part of the fans turning a blind eye at that point.
Look, there is a much bigger conversation that you and I could have. And maybe one day on Hit and Run, we should just do it. Like, I should just come on and we should talk about this on like a grander scale. See how I'm booking myself for your show?
All right, you're hired. You're in.
That it's emblematic of a lot of things that society, from a societal standpoint, we're okay with. Like, oh, look at all this joy we're having right now. This doesn't feel totally on the level. Uh-huh. Yeah, but we're all having a good time and the drinks are great. And then you walk away and you're like, well, wait a minute. Was that not pure fun that we were all having?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. That's the thing. And then you wrestle with that and then you get angry. And then as you get older, maybe you forgive some of it. And it's a slippery slope, man. When we talked about that, like, you know, the evolution of morality on this, some texters got in and said, I will never forgive. We heard from the caller who said he would never forgive.
A texter brings up a really good point. I like this comp, and I don't know if that's what they were trying to do. But it's where my mind went. Sammy Sosa at bats, especially in June of 98, were like Devin Hester kickoffs.
They absolutely were. And baseball over $1.62, it's much harder to give you moments that feel that important.
Isn't it funny that Lawrence's beginning of the score was Michael Jordan and Sammy Sosa, and mine is Matt Eberflus and Tyreek Stevenson?
Sorry
about
that.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, it's great.
And Yoan Moncada.
Yeah, I got Michael Jordan winning championships, Walter Payton doing a weekly radio show, and Sammy Sosa hitting 20 home runs in June. That's what I got.
Yeah, that's strong.
It must be nice. Yeah,
that's pretty strong. That's strong. A pretty strong start.
That's strong right there.
Sorry about your start, though, because that's not good.
No.
That's not good for you that Matt Eberflus was your welcome to the score moment. And then you get what? The White Sox losing a historic amount of games and the Cubs not living up to expectations, the Blackhawks going backwards, and the Bulls in constant rebuild.
Yeah.
Sorry about all of that.
Absolutely. Let's
Speaks, before we go to the calls, I got an
please
idea.
Please do, yes.
I think that there should be a double dip here by Sammy. I think he's got to go to Sox Fest Live.
Like, what are the dates of it? Is that can that be a soft opening? Can that be a...
That would be... All right, wait. Let's play this out a little bit. Yeah. Let's play it out.
Uh-huh.
If you're the White Sox, one's first?
Yeah, Cubs convention is first.
All right, then they won't do it.
They 100% should.
They absolutely should offer an invite for him to just come do a hot 10 over at Sox Fest Live. And be like, he was ours first.
He was our player first. We'll take sloppy seconds, even though he was ours first.
Yeah, have him come on over there, get his Sosa Sox jersey out. I think it'd just be something that all Chicago baseball fans could just enjoy.
Where's George Bell? I'm only doing it. I'm only going to green light
George Bell too.
Be a George Bell for both as well. You know,
so both of them just show up to the wrong one. We were supposed to have Sammy Sosa here at the Cubs convention, but all of a sudden George Bell showed up.
Let that be the first time, and then eventually we can have Matt Karchner and John Garland do the same kind of back and forth between the convention and
Eloy. Yeah, get him in there. He's not doing anything right now.
It's too soon.
Too soon.
Dylan Cease is good.
You know. Get Dylan Cease over at Sox Fest?
Yeah. He's gone from there, too. So now we can all bond over that.
Oh, yeah.
God, this is sad. It is sad. This is Bobby in Oak Park on Spiegel and Holmes on the score. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, what's up? You know, not here to defend Sammy Sosa's character. You know, that's not my job. But, you know, the idea that he even needs to apologize to me is too far. You know, like, that Tom Ricketts gets to hold this moral superiority over Sammy Sosa and make him apologize to come back and be welcomed by the fans. That doesn't sit right with me at all. It's just this power wielding nonsense coming from the owner. You know, the reason Sammy Sosa should have his jersey retired is because of the excitement and the joy that you're describing in 1998. I mean, I was in grade school and middle school, and I mean, a huge part of the reason I even to this day go to Cubs games and give money to the organization. you know, athletes are complicated. You know, I don't need him to be a moral standard. You know, my other favorite Cub is Mark Grace. You know, when Mark Grace fit off the field, you know, I don't remember a huge controversy about something much worse, you know, for Mark Grace to come back and be part of the Cubs family. So the part that doesn't sit well with me is this idea that he has to, you know, kiss the Ricketts ring to come back and be celebrated. And look, steroids happened. Sammy Sosa is one of the most underappreciated baseball players that played in the any time of baseball, let alone during the steroid era.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad for him that he's back. And if he feels like he had to apologize to do it and it's what he wanted to do, good for him. Didn't need an apology in my book. And I don't like that the Ricketts held this over him.
I
share those feelings.
Heard loud and clear. You share those feelings? You share all of that in the back of
your head? Yeah, I think that the caller kind of encapsulated kind of how I feel about it, because that's what I was getting at during transition, where so he's got to apologize to guys that there were other things that happened inside of that clubhouse while Sammy was a Cub. There are other things that happened, and I'm not trying to like break bad on any of the other guys that had stuff that was going on off the field, but considering that there was some illegality, there was all sorts of stuff happening inside of clubhouses with teammates, that we hold Sammy to this, well, he's got to apologize. I'm like, does he? Like, I don't see that as being necessary. And I agree with the caller too about the idea of there being this kissing of the ring, this bending the knee that has to happen. But to Tom's credit, in his statement, it doesn't, while it might have been necessary for the gesture to happen, there's no real acknowledgement of what, if anything, Sammy is apologizing about. And maybe that does show a difference in feeling between now, and maybe he just wanted the good feeling of, it's been too long, this is stupid. Speaks, have you ever been mad at someone and then you forget why you're mad at that person?
Oh, of course. Me and my wife, every few days, you know? Like, we'll have a little fight about something, then we'll be like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, we love each other. Yeah, my bad. Okay, cool, we got that. You know, like a lot of people can relate to that. But
Or you like fall out with someone,
sure.
and then you're like, wait, I can't even remember. I remember these feelings.
Oh, or how about
but
this?
I don't remember the thing that elicited these feelings.
Or how about still being hurt by something that happened, but realizing that through forgiveness, we are forgiven from the prayer of St. Francis. Realizing, and truth be told, realizing that resentment is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. That it doesn't do you any good on a human, very specific level. And I completely understand where the caller's coming from and where you are coming from, but forgiveness is a very personal thing. And I do believe that Tom Ricketts' choice to not forgive Sammy was a very personal thing. And it's his team. We may not like that he's wielding his personal feelings over it, but he is now conceded, and why he's conceded is a fascinating story, and we all want to get to the bottom of why he's conceded. And of course, there may be some commerce mixed in with the convention. There may be some personal evolution mixed in, but it's up to him. And these owners of these sports teams are humans. Steve Cohen is bringing everything he's got, including financial complete abandon to it, because that's his freaking choice. These owners get to make the rules. And that includes, in this topic, steroids forgiveness. And I'm fascinated to know what went into the stubbornness and why it has now gone away. Because to your point, this has been a concession. A serious concession has gone on, because that ain't no apology.
That concession is a better word, Speaks. Oh, I like that.
Right? This is a concession of like, all right, fans want this. We as an organization should have this. This is the way of the world. I can't hold on to everything that I was holding on to the way that I wanted to, because it just doesn't make sense. It's about much more than me. Okay, I concede. Here we go.
I love this texter. This texter, he says, I've forgotten when to reconcile, then realize I was right to not like the person for brand new reasons. Hey, sometimes it bees like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes your mind protects you from stuff.
Absolutely. And man, I've been really fascinated with this idea of forgiveness for a while now, because it has resonated with me on a lot of very personal levels, you know, and
it's part of your core. Like, that's what, you know, that's why, you know, even though I said it's your bit, but I mean that lovingly. I was thinking about you this morning, Spies, because I was listening to Space Cowboy by Jamiroquai. And
I love that album.
And like, inside of that song, he's like, good vibes and good times. And I'm like, that's some speak stuff right there, Jamiroquai.
Yeah, but thank
you very much for that.
Lawrence, I love you knowing that it is both me and the bit. Because truth be told, Jay Zawoski made it a bit when he did the impression. Oh, man, you know what I'm wearing right now?
Is it a good vibes t-shirt?
100%. 100%.
Get out of here.
It's on right now. Bought for me by my wife because she knows it is both my core and the bit. And
well, she's also good vibes, though.
She is. Like, but guess what?
She's like the definition of it. Like, when she comes around, I like just feel better.
but it takes work to get there, man. It takes work to get there. And you don't want to delude yourself. I got too much logic in there to fully delude myself. But I know that forgiveness is a big, big part of it. I know that for sure.
I'm with you on that because I'm a grudge holder. And I've been working towards not holding grudges. Like, that's something that over the last decade or so, like, I am cognizant of my ability to hold a grudge.
Yeah.
And you're right about the idea of it being like a poison to yourself.
Oh, yeah, man. And it's funny because I heard that quote for the first time from Carrie Fisher in a one-woman show, and I referenced it. And my friend Kalyan Patak, the percussionist in Tributosaurus, who is schooled in the ancient Indian wisdom and philosophy of his culture, said, oh, yeah, that goes back centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries.
Sometimes that's where the best wisdom comes from.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone lines and continue with Bill from Des Plaines on 670 The Score. Hey, Bill, you're on with Spiegel and Holmes.
Hello, fellas. You guys really hit it off, especially Spiegs, with your last rant about the way Ricketts talk about Sammy and the way you feel about Sammy and Lawrence and all of us. We friggin' love Sammy. We miss Sammy. I've had goosebumps since I heard this story that I've waited to kind of tune into you guys and – you know, I'm a little upset with Dan because I called in there and he took a Mets caller after me, before me, and I was a little upset. But I'm glad I got on your show because I got a lot of stories about Sammy. I used to live across from Wrigley Field, 1042 Waveland Avenue. It was a building that said, "Hello, Binions." And the left field foul poles split our building. And I lived on the first floor when I went to DePaul. So I went there in 92 when Sammy was traded for George Bell. And it was kind of boring those couple of years, but after the strike in 94 and then they came back in 98, he and Mark McGwire are really the reason why we love baseball to this day.
That's the part that I think a lot of people don't remember. And I appreciate that whether we're talking about Robbie and Alex or younger people that are inside of our listening audience that didn't experience it, it does sound like old guys talking about something from a long, long time ago, and there's some accuracy to that. But in an era where there weren't as many options for your eyes and your dollars and your minutes as a sports fan, having all of that stuff available to you and being so engrossed in what it was and not having your attention split the way it's split for all of us right now, it was a time. And that's part of the allure and the lore of baseball is the romanticism of it. And it's hard to compartmentalize some of that stuff too, because we remember and we romanticize and it's not always exactly what was going on.
Oh, absolutely true. And you know, look, a texture had said earlier, it's like, why do we give a crap about this when football players are taking whatever they are taking and doing whatever they have to do to stay healthy? And theoretically, the answer is this, that baseball has 150 years of theoretically comparable statistics. Theoretically. Since the game itself has barely changed in a century, and therefore the record book takes on this importance and this romance, and look at the chase for 60 home runs with Shohei Ohtani and the
chase.
Yeah,
but Spiegs, like, that's what I mean about the romanticizing versus the real.
You're exactly
right.
We
just had a reckoning
in
baseball about that.
And I think we've had that reckoning progressively to a lot of us for 20 or 30 years since the roids and since this stuff. It has been a progressive reckoning, and that's certainly what it's been for me. And I suspect what it's been for Tom Ricketts. Let's keep taking some phone calls, keep talking about this, Lawrence, but we got Mark Grody coming up at 4, and we got to get to one of the Bears captains who I kind of want to be stripped of his captaincy, frankly.
Wait, but Jalen said it was just a wardrobe malfunction. Yeah. It's been cleared up.
Not him.
Who have a big, giant C on his jersey with 18 stars on it.
That's what happens when you make Justin Timberlake your equipment manager. You know? You can't be doing that. No, it's not Jalen. It's somebody else. We'll get there, though. It's Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score. Continuing with your phone calls on the news of the day. Cubs concede to Sammy, who sort of apologizes. We take your calls next.
Spiegel and Holmes.
If you're not listening to this show, then I don't know how you're hearing this. But if you're also not listening for other reasons, then you need to stop not listening, because this is a show you should be listening to.
Afternoons on The Score.
If that's not a promo, I don't know what is.
This is, like I say, this is not a question that I expected from you.
Yes, that was Lou Kanellis getting Sammy at the NBC Tower. And Sammy was not ready.
No, he was not.
Sweet Lou had a question for him, and he was not ready.
It's the right question. It's the right question. And if Sammy is going to be present at the Cubs convention or sometime this year at Wrigley or however he decides to do that, he's going to have to be ready to talk a little bit. And I think that will probably be awkward, as the apology itself was kind of awkward. It's interesting, Lawrence, like some people are texting in and have texted in listening to our conversation about forgiveness and about, you know, the bigger human stuff that we're talking about. You talking about grudges. And I feel like this is why this is bigger than a Cubs story, really. It's bigger than that. A couple people said, wait, you guys don't think Sammy's a good person, do you? Like, they're bringing up a lot of the other stuff that Sammy did. And I think that good and bad are false binary things often in terms of this kind of stuff. There's a lot of bad stuff that Sammy did other than steroids, and we could go over them piece by piece. But there's also a lot of goodness that he brought to his life. And I don't feel like you discount all of that. In the end, he's the one who has to reconcile all of that, you know, not us.
I agree. And I spent some time in those clubhouses, too. And I had interactions with Sammy, and most of them were pretty good, actually. There's so much of, like, handling the celebrity aspect of it, where Sammy Sosa became this celebrity. And was he playing into the idea of, look at me, I am the all-American guy from the Dominican. You know what I mean? All of that stuff, he played into it. He played into carrying the American flag because of what America had done for him as a player. There's a lot. Like, trust me. Like, Russ and I had...
I remember, I was thinking of it as you were talking. You and your friend Russ Dorsey had an incredible conversation, a few of them really, about Sammy and his blackness as it relates to Dominican culture. And I've been thinking about that a lot. He was once a hero to the Dominican baseball culture. Is he still? I don't know the answer to that.
I think probably, and I haven't been down there to ask anyone, but I think that that's probably the case. But that became another way that people could kind of get at Sammy, of being like, well, hey, what's going on with his skin? Is he bleaching his skin? And there are plenty of black baseball fans that feel betrayed,
yep,
by that, because of issues of skin tone and that being a separator inside of the diaspora on whether it's better to live with your natural color and be who you are. Like, it's one of the reasons why, like, someone like Manny Meñoso or Roberto Clemente, like, those guys, they resonate with me because they understood their heritage on multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear Roberto Clemente talk about being Puerto Rican and being black at the same time, like, and understanding how he felt about it, that it can make you feel icky when you think that there's someone who is trying to run away from their blackness to the point where they feel it necessary. If he's done this, I mean, that's what it looks like. But if Sammy has bleached his skin, why do you feel that way? And then sure. you get into issues of colorism where that is happening in the Dominican Republic and it's happening in India and it's happening in Japan.
Of course.
You know, it's a terrible, terrible thing that colonialism has done to all of us. And this is one of the ways that it manifests itself.
It's amazing to watch the eyes of our producers, Robbie, in this case, be like, oh my God, this got a lot bigger. Sosa's a huge figure. and societally and like socially, it's a fascinating figure. And a lot of times people like that become a template for big, big conversations. This is Derek in Wisconsin on The Score with Spiegel and Holmes. What's up, Derek?
What's going on? I'm not going to go crazy about this. Whether or not you think he should have to apologize, that it wasn't an apology. He's been a coward for years, and this solidifies that opinion for me. Treating reporters and fans like we're idiots just to get his foot back in the Cubs door. The apology was insulting, but at the same time, he was part of baseball history and an amazing chapter in my baseball fandom. So I also think him and all the steroid users with massive numbers should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's essentially a museum, and excluding him and others from it would do a disservice to the game, in my opinion.
That's the museum part. It was Cowley who got me thinking that way. And it was probably a decade ago where he was talking about it because he's a Hall of Fame voter.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, like, it's a museum. Like, that's the way that you should look at it. And I was like, you know what? You're right. That I don't know if it's a fight that needs to happen. I do think that with Sammy in particular, that part of the reason that people feel a certain way about him, Speaks,
yeah,
is because it was seemingly a heel turn, where with Palmeiro or Maguire, they weren't even like considered like good guys. Same thing with A-Rod, not even Bonds, not really considered good guys. And I'm not saying that they're not good guys. I'm just saying that the perception of them was not that.
Yeah.
With Sammy, it was, oh no, like this is the cuddly, smiling guy that goes out there and plays hard and has got the
Mickey Mouse ears.
Absolutely.
You know? 100%.
And there's some killing of the myth.
Yes.
That I think angers people when you go, wait, after all of that, you're not that? Like, I feel betrayed because of it.
Absolutely. I felt it. I admit to feeling it. I mean, think about when Sports Illustrated's Rick Riley confronted Sammy in the Cubs clubhouse about steroids, and it was, what? You're making me talk about this? And he offered to go get him tested. I'd say 70% of the public was Team Sammy on that.
Well, I mean, that also is, that's some... some real sensationalistic journalism right there, too.
100%. But Riley didn't quite have that rep. He hadn't fully been exposed in that way and fully thought of in that way. He was, you know, he had the full glory of Sports Illustrated at its peak behind him and the full respect of it. And it was, I mean, but like, to your point, how dare you question him was the feeling of a lot of people. And a lot of that was, we didn't want him to be questioned. We didn't want that to be true. You know, I remember having those feelings watching Bonds just be so great. I didn't want it to be true. And then eventually you knew it was true and you just had to roll over and take it. This is Tony from Park Ridge on Spiegel and Holmes. What's up, Tony?
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. You guys teed it up for me. I'm the old guy. Been a Cub, lifelong Cub fan for 70 years. Okay, let me gather myself. Sammy is nothing but a mega, mega self-serving egomaniac. All he cared about his whole entire career was himself. I think it's disrespectful to the Cub organization. We've had players like Ernie, Rhino, and Billy Williams, Phil Cabaretta even. You know, you're respecting a guy like this. No, no.
I understand where you're coming from, Tony. I think you're right that Sammy was extremely narcissistic and may still be. We don't know.
And some of the best baseball players that have ever lived fall into that category.
Because this sport allows for it. That this sport allows the incredibly selfish ball player to be a wonderful and important part of really good teams. It's a game that has the blend of the individual achievement within the team concept that allows for it. So if you're wanting everybody to be what your favorite players were like, you might also not know exactly what your favorite players were like.
100%. There are a lot of people that you would hold up as heroes that if you knew the real stories behind it, you would not feel that way.
Like you know what I always think of when this conversation comes up is the many stories that there were of Babe Ruth running through the writer's train car as they traveled with the Cubs from town to town, naked, chasing a girl who was not his wife, of questionable age as well. And everybody said, well, that's just the Babe. And onward we go.
Yeah, in some cases it's allowed. In some cases it's not. And that's why I brought up the idea of the role that we played in this. Because
we were those writers in the train car.
We weren't.
On some level.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, look at how people look at Bonds.
Yeah.
Versus the way that they look at Maguire. Or even the way that they look at A-Rod.
Oh, yeah.
You know, A-Rod is up here representing baseball,
outrageous.
Even though he was suspended for an entire year.
You know how mad that makes millions of people and thousands of people within baseball? You know how many baseball people I've talked to are like, I can't believe that Fox and MLB is letting A-Rod do that. And there he is. He'll never get into the Hall of Fame, probably. But we'll see, because the eventuality of the museum voting, it depends on the electorate.
Just you wait for 20 more years when Alex Rodriguez is a Ford Frick finalist.
As a broadcaster? They should never let that happen to Tom Hamilton. Absolutely never.
While you guys are cuddling.
We do hang out. I was in bed with Tom Hamilton during the playoffs for every Cleveland game. This is Desmond on the South Side. What's up, Desmond? You're on the Score with Spiegel and Holmes.
Hey, guys. All this outrage really has an old man yells at cloud vibe. Like, yes, Sammy was a bag, but there's bags everywhere in sports. Like, do you think Green Bay is going to make Aaron Rodgers wait 20 years before coming back to Lambeau?
I hope so.
Absolutely not. If Sammy was so horrendous and he committed so many of these wrongs, this nothing burger of an apology would never be sufficient. Like, it just shows to me what a joke this all was and nothing but a you-know-what measuring contest on Ricketts' part is the new owner coming in. Like, he's a hypocrite.
Oh, gosh.
Well, Desmond, thank you for not cussing.
No, he didn't. He handled himself well. My anger and schadenfreude at Aaron Rodgers came out right there after a great conversation about forgiveness. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, and because you want to hang out and do ayahuasca with him.
I didn't say that, okay?
That's kind of what you said in the text thread.
I said I would hang out with that version of him, that you shared the clip of him, you know, clearly feeling it in the in that documentary.
He wanted to live a butterfly's life?
Butterfly is just another term for the caterpillar. It's really the caterpillar the entire time. And caterpillar opens his wings and just cannot f***ing believe this is my life now. I get to fly around. I get to smell flowers and eat flowers. To live like that. Living your wildest dreams every single day.
Man, I'm down to hang out with that version of Aaron Rodgers who's just in awe of nature and its wondrous ways.
I don't know. I feel like I'd have to be in the same altered state to not be annoyed by that guy.
I hear you. I might not last long, but I'd sooner hang out with that guy than the press conference bozo that he's been all season long.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Apparently, he is a... Today, he is a multifaceted person.
I am a little walking contradiction today.
Because when we come back, he is angry at one of the Bears' captains.
I really am.
And he's going to tell you why next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
All right, Speaks, the people have waited long enough. Why are you mad at DJ?
Oh, man. Lawrence, how many times in our lives covering sports as sports fans have we heard about players maybe thinking about things beyond the games that they have upcoming?
How many? 1, 2, 3, Cancun.
How many times have we? That's a great reference. How many times have we joked about that and said it looks like this, but I'm not saying. I'm just saying. And he just said it flat out. Here's DJ Moore from yesterday talking about the offseason.
Follow-up to Kevin's question and the offseason. I mean, that has to be something you guys are already thinking about in terms of get it right. And what kind of ideas do you have when you think about the offseason already and training camp and making it better?
What I'm thinking about? Vacation.
To clear your mind of all this?
There you go. Yeah. Let them do all the work and then, you know, just come back and ready to go.
All right. So that's outrageous.
What?
Why is it outrageous?
Because you're a captain. Because you're a freaking captain. And I'm tired of the captain thing. I'm going to take it so much more seriously for the rest of my football covering life.
They're going to have 16 next year.
Dude, they got 8 of them. And some of them are dudes who've never had a winning season, never once in their lives. And some of them are dudes who care about showing up and doing their own job, and that's that. And that's not how football works, and you know it. That is not how football can work. If you actually are a captain, you got to care about getting the whole thing right and making sure everybody else is caring about getting the whole thing right. And the simplest way to actually do that is to actually give a crap yourself. And if that dude is half checked out and is not going to be like, as soon as the offseason hits, like, or at least in advance of the offseason, let's talk about what the plan's going to be. I mean, my God, I relate to the human level of not wanting to think about the bad Bears anymore. Believe me, I relate to that. But dude, you are supposed to be one of the leaders on this freaking team. And there are 3 weeks left. Stay engaged. I was embarrassed for him when I heard that.
I would say, one, I think 5 is the maximum amount of captains you should have. You should have 2 on each side of the ball and then 1 for special teams.
I think, but can I just want to interrupt to say, how about you should have as many captains as actually deserve it? They actually have to be the right kind of leaders and headspace to have that designation.
I agree. And if your roster is built correctly, you should have 2 on each side of the ball and 1 on special teams. And this team doesn't have that. I want to give DJ a little bit of grace just because of how the question was asked, that he didn't volunteer that. It was a prompt. And I also think it was a little bit of a human moment there for him. I'm not as mad as you are about this, but I hear you, because he could have just been like, off season. No, like, we've got Detroit this week. You know, I understand where you're coming from. He could have just been like, we got 2 more division games. Uh-huh. Like, we have an opportunity to play a role in how the NFC playoff picture, they can actually affect it.
Because if you're thinking about that, if that's what you're thinking about in the offseason, then how do I know you're actually checked in for the remainder of the season?
And also, DJ Moore just got paid, so that vacation might just be awesome. Like, he might be looking forward to, like, using that money on, like, the best vacation ever.
Where might DJ go?
Oh, my God. Anywhere he wants.
Literally, just like, he can spin the globe and just put a pin there. That's where he can go.
Look, you know what this is going along with? A whole bunch of other stuff that we've heard and seen about DJ Moore and from DJ Moore
the
all year. Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff, whether it's like, you know, taking himself off the field in the middle of a play. It's all the body language stuff that's been there. It's other stuff that we've heard, some of which has been reported, some of which has not been reported. It's all of that. But then it was that. I know he's asked specifically about the offseason. I get it. But there's a way to answer that and show that you are actually thinking about the greater good, and he's not doing that.
But I will say that, like, I haven't gotten any sense, especially when you watch Monday night's game, that DJ is checked out. He seems to be fully engaged and willing to do above and beyond. Like, We don't really have a really deep running back room right now, DJ. How do you feel about taking some carries out of the backfield?
And he's doing that.
Whatever you need.
Does he say, towards the end of that exchange, can you play it one more time, Robbie Triano? Can you play that exchange one more time? This is great.
Follow up to Kevin's question and the offseason. I mean, that has to be something you guys are already thinking about in terms of get it right. And what kind of ideas do you have when you think about the offseason already and training camp and making it better?
What I'm thinking about? Mm-hmm. Vacation.
To clear your mind of all this?
There you go. Yeah. Let them do all the work and then, you know, just come back and ready to go.
Let them do all the work and just come back and be ready to go.
Let them do all the work on getting this roster right. And that I'm convinced that he's doing all the work for himself, and he wants to see how all of this is going to play out.
Too many captains, man.
That is fair.
That's the issue. Like, okay, if he's just, you know, going to be a player and show up and do his thing, then okay. But that's not a captain. There's no way that's an answer from a captain.
It is reading it today and really like looking at the words of him being in the league for 7 years and never being on a winning team. Man, that was striking. Like, wow. Like to spend your whole career in that, and you wonder how that affects you and how you look at the game and the world because of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Luckily, we have 3 more weeks to discuss this and then an entire offseason when we're all sure that they're going to get it right in the offseason.
Oh, certain of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Grody has got a bear suit. We can ask him a little bit about that because he's the one who's out here trying to get DJ in trouble. That is next. Spiegel and Holmes here with you until 6 on the score.